This is The Guardian.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's Black History Month. So on today's episode, we're talking about all things Black British pop culture. With DJ Target.
We've come on like leaps and bounds. UK Garage has had a huge moment, and at the same time, there was a new generation.
And Henry Kashue from Kiss FM.
His speech when he went up on stage was like, bro, I made this video with 80 English pounds. That is culture right there.
You're listening to Pop Culture with me, Shante Joseph, for The Guardian. Listen, when Stormzy said, what a time to be a Black Brit, I felt that in my chest. As it's Black History Month, I wanted to spend this episode celebrating pop culture through a Black British lens.
Most people either call me Target, Targs, mm-hmm. Targo, like very few people call me Darren now. If you want to call me Darren, I'm
Target.
With that.
But yeah, I love it.
Whatever you're comfortable with. Sometimes I forget that my own name's Darren because like it never gets used anymore.
DJ Target started his career in music as part of the grime collective Roll Deep. He came into the studio to talk about the latest series of The Rap Game UK, which he hosts on BBC Three with Krept and Conan. But we started by talking about his own music career.
Had a big love of US rap music, R&B, dancehall, bashment, or ragga as we called it back then. My love for music just grew, and then I discovered pirate radio, which was a big part of East London and jungle music that originally pulled me in and wanted, like, gave me the want to be a DJ. Still in school, started my little vinyl collection, managed to get a slot on one of those pirate radio stations. Went from doing the jungle thing for a few years to in the height of UK Garage, we formed another collective called Pay As You Go Cartel, which we had a lot of success with. And then, yeah, a lot of people will know me from being, like you said, part of Roll Deep, which was, I guess, one of the seminal kind of foundation collectives that, I guess, kicked off the whole grime movement back in, you know, the early noughties. It's been a roller coaster of a journey.
And we did an episode all about the kind of evolution of Black British music post Windrush. And for that episode, we interviewed DEE. And he kind of had the same story of having a radio and listening to predominantly a lot of jungle at the start. And I wonder, when you think back to that time, were there kind of specific songs that you were listening to that really were like, nah, I need to get into this and play some music?
Like anything from Shy FX back in those days. Massive fan of like early Ronnie Size. To be fair, that the whole genre just had us all in a headlock. Like we were just addicted, obsessed with it. And I think the thing that really pulled us in, we discovered that these guys were, a lot of these guys that was on the radio were predominantly from East London, from neighboring boroughs, and it was like something we could really relate to in terms of an inspiration, because everything before that had been across the waters.
Yes.
A Jamaican artist, a US artist, whereas we were discovering music now and producers, MCs and DJs that were from our neck of the woods. And I think that was what really made us think it was possible that we could do it.
Yeah, and growing up, my dad used to DJ and produce and put on loads of drum and bass nights. And I always used to say, like, other people would, you know, be woken up on a Sunday morning to clean with, like, maybe some soul, maybe some gospel. But it would be, like, pots and pans, drum and bass, like, early in the morning, like,
shake your
get up right now. And so it's like, gosh, it's a music that I absolutely love. And you can really see the connections back to the kind of the Caribbean and evolution of the sound.
100%.
But I kind of want to get a bit into your time in Roll Deep and just that sort of early grime era. What was your experience of the music scene then? And I guess how much has it changed now?
We've come on like leaps and bounds. Like then it was, like I said, we're talking around 2002, 2003, 2004. UK Garage had a huge moment. And at the same time, there was a new generation of DJs, MCs, namely like us and our peers, the likes of D-Double and everybody else who were fans of Garage, but we had our own take on it, our own spin on it. And Garage was a very much like upmarket, celebratory, like everybody looked really smart. It was very like champagne and I wouldn't say caviar, but that was the
Blazers
image.
Blazers to the club,
yeah,
basically.
And we were coming from places that were nothing like that. And we, I guess, wanted to reflect a bit of our own lifestyle and where we were from on the music. And that is where we kind of started to engineer and, I guess, steer the sound that we were making a little bit left from Garage and what ended up being known as grime music. We had no idea we was starting a brand new movement that 20 years later we'd be celebrating a Stormzy and a Dave and all of this success. We were just, everybody had something to say. A phrase that always goes with grime is self-sufficiency. I think we didn't have any, there were no outlets, there were no platforms to support us.
The infrastructure wasn't there.
And so it was pirate radio, it was local record shops and word of mouth and small events. And that's where it all started. And now we're looking at, you know, artists who have come up inspired by that, who are headlining Glastonbury and selling out the O2 Arena.
Hey, Glastonbury! Let's go! My brother's old. I tell you,
let's talk about the Rap Game UK. Series 5 is back on BBC 3 on Monday, 6th of November. For people who haven't seen it, tell us what it's about.
So basically, the Rap Game UK it's a competition. We have six rappers from all over the country, different levels of experience. But we don't want anybody that's like super established. This is all about, you know, these artists going on the journey, and basically they battle it out for 6 weeks in various challenges that test their rap ability, their skill to make a video, their confidence on stage, like a bunch of different factors we feel really help to build a successful rapper. And yeah, the winner gets £20,000 towards their career. They get a spot on the One Extra playlist this year. And yeah, it's just been incredible, the reaction that the show gets and how much people love it.
One thing I really love about it is how much it shines a light on talent outside of London. Like, how do you even find all of these individuals?
Do you know what? I think going back a few years, like the rap scene was so London-centric.
Yeah.
Like, people from outside of London had such a hard time breaking through, being heard, being appreciated. If you didn't have a London accent, it was almost like a little bit like, that doesn't sound right. And that was the case for so long. Like, I've seen over the years, artists from all across the UK, like, banging their head on the wall, like, what do I need to do to break through? And, like, gladly, we're now living a day and age where social media and the internet and all of that has kind of got rid of a lot of the gatekeepers in terms of, like, infrastructure and access to your audience, and that's enabled all these artists from around the country to really start building fan bases and connecting and having hits and success. You could look at H to Bugsy Malone to Mist. Young T and Bugsy, I could sit here and list. These are all top 10 selling platinum, in some cases, rappers with accents talking about their life from where they're from. So we want this to be a a UK-wide thing to represent what's happening in UK rap at the moment.
And have there been any moments from the previous series that have really stuck with you?
Every year is like the Clash Challenge is always a highlight, because
when I watch that, I'm thinking, how are you lot? You don't have to be judge and be impartial, but like when the camera pans to you and someone says something,
in fact, there's not even there is no impartial in that moment, because the reactions, it's real life, and like we have to just, obviously we're treating them all fairly, but like sometimes someone in this Clash episode, it's literally head to head, and there are no rules in rap battles. Anything can be said. It's kind of an unwritten thing that anything can be said, and you kind of just got to have thick skin, and not just have thick skin, you've got to be able to still deliver your piece. So you're seeing things being said, and sometimes massively disrespectful, like on serious levels. But in this environment, in that challenge, it's something that rappers have to kind of be able to deal with.
They always shake hands afterwards as well. I find it's
they
like...
live together, so it's like these lot are living together for the whole process. So don't get me wrong, sometimes people aren't speaking for a day or two, but there hasn't been a case where everybody hasn't come back together after, and it's all like family and friends after, and like everybody understands what went down. But there's been some like explosive moments. Yo, ballin' girl, you look like Paul Pogba.
I cannot believe I got to talk with Target today. And did you know he is so much taller in person? If you enjoyed our chat and you want to get deeper into the history of sound system culture in the UK, which we talked about, then go back and listen to our special Windrush episode if you haven't already. Let's take a minute, and if you're loving this discussion, then please, please, please subscribe so you never miss an episode, and make sure you drop a review. And when we come back, I'm getting into unforgettable moments from Black British pop culture with Henry Kashue.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
Welcome back, friends. From Little Miss Jocelyn skits to Skepta winning a Mobo, and even folklore like rapper Sneakbo turning into a cat in McDonald's, so many of my favorite pop culture moments and references come from the creativity and wit of Black cultural icons. With so much to choose from, I brought in Henry Kashue, superstar DJ and host on Kiss Fresh, to chat through our favorite moments. We're going to get into some Black British iconic pop culture moments. There's so much to think about. Even yesterday, I was with my friends and we were discussing some of our favorite moments, and we had a list that was like at least maybe 40 items long.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, gosh, how do we reduce this to something that is manageable that we can discuss on a podcast?
Right.
You've had a go at thinking of some iconic moments too.
Yeah.
And one thing that we both agreed on, both of our lists, was Skepta. Mm-hmm. And just so much to do with Skepta. But for you, what was the the big moment.
Do you know what? You're so right in that. Because I had to think of like Skepta moments and I was like, rah, there's actually quite a few. But I think for me, it was when he won Best Video for That's Not Me at the Mobos in 2014.
Nah, nah, that's not me. Act like a waste man, that's not me. Sex any girl, nah, that's not me. Lips any girl, nah, that's
he turned up to the Mobos in a tracksuit, which I absolutely loved.
Slay.
Slay. Even then, the fact that the music video itself was won off of the back of it being a green screen and him in a tracksuit with just a microphone and a DJ, I was like, wow, like this is so different to anything that we've ever seen. Because usually music video of the year is something that's kind of flashy, rare tear. But yes, I remember when his speech, when he went up on stage, was like, bro, I made this video with 80 English pounds.
That's not me, video cost me 80 English pounds.
And I was like, yeah, this guy's too sick. Very British of him.
I think for me, Skepta at the Brits 2017, when he performed Shutdown on stage, there was like a moment in the interlude of the song where he played the audio of that like woman talking about, you know, being intimidated by men dancing to grime. And it just kind of felt like this very rebellious, like almost somewhat like political or social statement on stage. And I find that I love the way that he is kind of authentically him. He understands his roots, but he's also risen through the ranks of music and culture and entertainment, and now even fashion with Mainz. He just seems unstoppable. Another iconic, I guess, moment, or not necessarily moment, but part of Black British pop culture has to be grime. Like, the sound itself, just as a sound, as a culture, as a way that we kind of communicated language, even the technology that accompanied grime, like the ringtones, the Bluetooth. When I think of grime, I think of iconic songs like 21 Seconds. 21 seconds to go. 'Cause if you like me, let me know. Let me in the studio. I got 21 seconds before I got to go. Just... And Pow. Yeah, Pow. Yeah, I'm lead for the beat. Pow. If you don't know about me. And like all of these people being introduced to us and becoming kind of celebrities to us as a kind of community, but then going on to be huge and international stars even.
So all it makes you think of is like Channel U, the lollipops in your hair, the wearing stripes, the Channel U era, definitely instrumental in Black British culture today. Because Shantay, I'll tell you something right now. The kids don't understand what we used to go through. Right now, everyone's a baddie.
Absolutely not.
Everyone's... To be a baddie back then, babe, your hair had to be slicked to the side.
Listen, mate, that thick round gel that you would be slicking your hair with, Jesus Christ.
A baddie today is different to a baddie back in the grime era.
You mentioned Channel U, and I guess for maybe listeners of the podcast who aren't aware or too young to know, Channel U was a British TV music channel, and it focused particularly on the British grime scene. It started in February 2003 and it closed up shop in 2018. And it was just such a huge, huge platform for, yes, established artists, but breaking new acts.
I remember when Chip and N-Dubs brought out a song together, I cried. I made a recording of the song on my little Nokia phone and then brought it to school and was like to everybody, oh my days, have you heard this new song? It's my ringtone now, and I literally infrareded it to everybody. Like, that was around me.
We actually struggled. There was no airdrop back in the day.
Babe, sorry, that is culture right there.
There were so many huge musicians that kind of got their break on there and became known to the masses. And I say the masses in terms of, like, us who were watching the channel.
To the point where even Tony Matter on Dutty Wine, I found that out from Channel U, bro.
RIP Channel U, man. You were about it at the time.
Honestly, on
we
job.
Moved on, but it's okay. Now let's get into a little bit of TV and film.
Love it.
We both had the same thing on our list, which was Top Boy. Top Boy is a Hackney-based crime thriller. That was what was first pitched as. And it was commissioned by Channel 4, written by Brennan Bennett. And it follows Deshane and he runs a street gang in Summerhouse in this fictional Hackney estate. Later seasons have kind of really gone into a lot of wider social issues, things like immigration, absolutely, things like domestic violence and abuse.
Gentrification.
Grooming. Yeah, gentrification. Mm-hmm. It's just a very, very beautiful show. Obviously, we've just come to the end of the entire series, but when it first dropped, the very first series of it, that was such an iconic moment. Do you remember like first watching Top Boy?
I think I do. I remember like on my mom's like fat granddad TV, because we hadn't had anything that was like kind of like that since Kidulthood. When it was revived back with the help of Drake in 2019, for me, that is like a point in current Black British culture that's going to change the mm-hmm. game forever. Because imagine a young Henry is at the O2, which Drake turned into the O3. And then you see like the trailer for the new Top Boy that's got Dave in it.
I don't care. These are my ends. Mine! Yeah?
When I say I was screaming, crying, snot-nosed
yes.
at the O2, that is like a whole moment. And because you don't really get stuff like that. And when you do, it's absolutely beautiful.
And do you know what the maddest thing is? Like a lot of people's perception of what it means to be Black British or understanding of Black British culture mm-hmm. comes from Top Boy. Because I remember when I went to Lisbon, I'm always in Lisbon, it's my second home. And I remember there was like some French people there and they heard my accent yeah. and they were like, where's the food, the Shin?
Really, I'll tell wow. you something. Why was I in Thailand and they're asking me, where's the food? I'm telling you.
Stop it.
I'm telling you.
Where's the fucking food?
You kind of mentioned Kidulthood, Adulthood.
Yeah.
They were precursors to Top Boy, weren't they?
They definitely were. So Kidulthood came out when I think I was in year six. So I definitely should not have been watching that. But my older cousins were watching it. And I was like, wow, this is cinema. This is telly. And plus, they all speak like me. Like there's not even any, like, you know, even in like Top Boy, obviously with mm-hmm. how language has like progressed and stuff, the slang that we used to use like back in 2009 wasn't actually very normal. Like we weren't normal yeah. people from 2006 to 2009. There wasn't actually one English word really that was being used in the right way. With Kidulthood, that mm-hmm. was like the real deal, because what do you mean by yo famalam? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that?
Yes.
And why were we using it so God. Often? And my size to describe somebody that is good looking.
Me, man, I've got a first look. My size. Hey, darling, I'm talking to you, man.
It's so authentic, the Kidulthood, to us, to especially me being in year six, hearing like how the older kids spoke, especially again mm-hmm. with the Channel U kind of space that just allowed us to be us. It just felt like music, yes. TV, culture, slang, language was just all coinciding with each other.
It was everything.
All at one time. It was one of the best things ever.
And whilst we're on the topic of TV, you want to get into India and Dami, the couple who were on Love Island in 2022. And so for people who don't know about them, they were a Black couple on the show. They had a somewhat rocky love story. They both went to Casa Amor and came back with different people, but ultimately ended up back together again. Make your case to the people.
Absolutely.
As to why this is up here in the ranks.
Let's go. You shouldn't have given me this platform, Shante. Let's go. Women have had it so bad. And Black people have had it
this
so
is very
bad
true.
On reality TV until, guess who? Say the names for me, Shante.
Dami in India.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Because when they came in, yeah. All right, cool. So mm-hmm. the trope was almost going to relive itself again. India was right. almost going to be Ikenna because the British public said so, pushed them together,
yeah.
but they weren't really like giving what they needed to give until unfortunately mm-mm. Ikenna left. But fortunately for Dami and India, we saw Black love for what it's kind of meant to be. It's not always a freaking struggle. Their narrative arc, yeah, is chef's mm-hmm. kiss. You have not seen anything like that on British TV before.
Love you too.
What?
Love you too.
Love me too.
I love you too.
It is definitely a moment.
Thank you.
I don't know if it's a big one for me, but when you explain it, like your argument has legs. I want to end by talking about social media and particularly Black Twitter, because it is such a huge part of British pop culture. Do you remember the app? It was called Kik.
Kik. I think I remember Kik. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And I remember, I feel like this video, there's a video of a guy, he sees his friend wearing Levi jeans.
Oh yeah.
And he says, yo fam, your jeans are bare funny, you know.
Levi jeans.
And Kik even predates Vine.
It does.
So it was like Kik and then it was Vine. You know, obviously these video apps have all led to the moment we're having now with TikTok.
Yeah.
But there was something specifically about Black British culture
yeah.
and social media coming together in this incredible way.
You are,
do you know what I mean? There are so
right.
many moments that exist simply because of the online world.
Let's put Black British, kind of like the YouTube-y, like the YouTuber, influencer, comedian, kind of that whole mm-hmm. space deserves its mm-hmm. own thing, because there is no one funnier than us. We had Chunks and Philly.
Vinland.
Oh my days!
We had Nella Rose.
Get like fulfill all your goals before you want to be cuddled up underneath
a big dick.
All of these things were so intrinsic to our everyday lives, to the point where even me, like mm-hmm. if I was in uni or after uni, I remember watching these guys on a bus in my room whilst I was doing my coursework. And I think that's the same for a lot of us as well.
I remember the early skits of like Damson Idris yeah. and Tom Matucci used to do yeah. skits online on YouTube. And I look at where they are now, absolutely blowing. Yeah. And like, you know, these people who just made funny videos like with each other, with their parents or, and it just like, when you look at where they are now,
catapults.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And they were people that we all spoke about.
Absolutely.
But also just like the online entertainment anyway, just in, from like Backchat all the way through to like The Grapevine and all of these shows that we've kind of had online that have been viral and hilarious and brought so many characters to our screens now. Mm. It's like, these people are cemented in like Black British pop culture history. When I think about the heights of this culture, I think of Munya Chihuahua and how huge he is now and how he has just like gamed all of these algorithms, how he's just consistently produced amazing, high quality, fast content yeah. that's so on the nose, talks about exactly what we're experiencing, mm-hmm. makes it funny, deals with big issues. I just think he is kind of like, he doesn't owe his success to like those people, but it's like that sort of way of being comfortable online mm-hmm. has definitely aided him in being able to have the platform he has today.
Absolutely. So when he came now out with Unknown P, I was like, bro, this is only a matter of time, because this guy just does this for fun. This is just how he has conversations in life. Like, it's just who he is.
Private school, I speak proper. And you know I've inherited billions. So I've got more pounds and pounds and I've got more millies and millions.
And so him being an intrinsic part to, I guess, Black British culture, how we, especially Black people anyway, we like satirize everything. Like
everything
is like satirical. Everything is funny. Everything we make a joke of, no matter how bad it gets, because what if we're going to do one thing, it will be laugh. The way that he kind of encapsulates that and puts that into his online content is absolutely beautiful to see.
Best.
Do you know what I mean? Especially having seen him kind of work his way up to that. So it's beautiful.
We've kind of covered a lot of what I found interesting and what you found interesting. And I guess as we wrap up, is there a particular moment we can crown as the number one iconic moment British pop culture?
This is too
I know
hard.
That's a tall order.
It's really, really hard. I don't know if I can really crown one, although I will say that maybe The Origin has to be like that kind of kid adulthood kind of Channel U time where everybody was kind of starting their creativity, starting to do a little thing, see what sticks, and then everything else, I guess, comes off the back of that.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. Before you go, I want to tell you about Guardian Jobs. Guardian Jobs connects you with the like-minded people building rewarding careers founded on shared values. There are lots of quality roles in education, charity, green, and government. Search Guardian Jobs to find your next role. This week's episode was produced by Hattie Moya, sound design by Mal Lasseto, original music by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producer is Maz Ebtahaj. See you next Thursday.
This is The Guardian.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.